strength I don't know how to play. And I don't want to anyway. Need to delete this game and go back to another save. But my hard drive's fucked. Zero charisma, zero luck. I don't have any skills or the XP to fix my.
Hello and welcome to the National Institute for Gamer Review Culture Terror episode number 9. I am DK.
I'm Lewis, and we're dealing with a better class of Jew here.
Yes, and not just a better class of Jew, but a better class of audio. I hope our audience can hear and appreciate some of the differences. We're still working out some of the kinks, but it seems like, and I think from here on out, we shouldn't have to deal with quite the level of Nick Mason tier background noise, which is, you know, always, it's no knock at all, but
R.I.P. to the 6 days in Fallujah episode, which is the best episode in my opinion, but sounds like trash.
I'm looking forward to playing 6 days in Fallujah personally. I it should be out pretty soon, I think.
It's December, or is it holiday?
Something like that, yeah, holiday season, but holiday, because they call it Christmas. Yeah. Anyway, on that topic of holiday versus Christmas and Hollywood people in the media, today we wanted to do a little discussion of Robert Zimmerman, also known as Bob Dylan.
Do you want his list of names?
Yeah, absolutely.
So he went through many aliases from his career. Some are more, he was LARPing as a white guy initially. He was Elston Gunn, Blind Boy Grunt, Bob Landy, Robert Milkwood Thomas. Ted Ham Porterhouse. There's a bunch of but his Hebrew name is Zabti Zizel Ben Ibrahim, which he never went with.
Okay, wait a second. Now this is some deep lore that I'm not aware of. Now, what is a Hebrew name? Because I understand like a baptism name, but what is that? It's just what it says.
It's just what it's. I assume that's his name.
Because his by his what is it? His
well, I think when you go to like Hebrew school, they don't call you Bobby. I imagine that you need some kind of.
Oh God, Robert Zimmerman.
Yeah. No. Or maybe he went to Israel and they.
Yeah.
Stamped on the passport.
Did he go to Israel?
I'm sure he's been to Israel.
Yeah,
I checked
that's
that.
A good
100% sure. Yeah.
Yes, and he was born in Duluth, Minnesota, which I know someone from Duluth, an older person. Who was always kind of like, at one time I asked them, it was like, you know, so how do you feel about, you know, Bob Dylan? And they're like, he never liked Duluth, and we never liked him. You know, it was sort
really?
Of, yeah.
Interesting. Because he definitely puts on a front of
yes,
being
yes, exactly. That's
Minnesota.
Why.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. But no, it's like he left and he never looked back. And that was the whole thing with, you know, Highway 61 Revisited, which is probably his best work, I guess. I mean,
we'll talk about this, but yeah. I actually really like Desire and Blood on the Tracks.
Okay, yeah, Blood on the Tracks, I think, is another.
I have a great,
cool,
yeah, narrative for that.
But I would say, if you know, as much as we're gonna probably rag on him to some extent, I definitely even those high points are somewhat uneven. Highway 61 Revisited and Blood on the Tracks are my personal favorites, and I think they overall pretty good albums. Leaving aside any kind of other, you know, degeneracy or subversiveness. And Highway 61, famously, of course, is Highway 61 outside of Duluth. And it's sort of, you know, one of the themes there is, you know, him going back to this place that he left in kind of bad terms and reevaluating his relationship to it. I will say, though, on that note, and maybe this is, I don't know how to say, but like the one of the things that irks me most about Bob Dylan and has always and I think is just sort of like the pernicious influence of this kind of approach to music and culture generally is this idea of like him as some kind of musical genius or lyrical genius, and like people are like poring over his lyrics and trying to, you know, understand what they mean and about the deep qualities of his soul. It's like, you know,
you're gonna like this. So
please, yeah.
My parents have a beard like Deadheads and kind of deeply in this kind of scene, if you will.
Sure.
I grew up with a Bob Dylan discography book.
A book.
So all the lyrics of all the songs in order by album. And I read it a few times.
Sure.
Like it's poetry. You know, it's kind of like it's poetry. It's very interesting.
I know people. I know like people in another person I knew who was a very, very big Bob Dylan fan was also in the New York poetry scene. Like there is still a very small kind of circle jerk of these kind of types of people who you know like what's that? That doesn't matter. But you know what I'm talking about.
Greenwich Village.
Yeah, well, I mean, that was back in the day. Now it's a little bit outside. I don't know exactly where. It's still in Manhattan, but I don't think it's in Greenwich Village anymore. That's where, of course, Bob Dylan was back in the day in the East Village. No, it was. It's like this. The kind of people who win the poetry awards.
Is the one that Sam Hyde went to on the bicycle.
Maybe. Anyway, like it's every so often, you know, they still give these. They write these poetry books that nobody reads, and they give these like poetry awards. And I knew a guy who was like essentially attached to that world as a kind of buttgoy, and he was super into Bob Dylan and like it was to him it wasn't Wallace Stevens. It was like Wallace Stevens was from a previous generation. It was one of these I don't remember. I'll look it up in a minute. But yeah, and the point is that they very much like, you know, even in that kind of like formal academic-ish poetry world. Would look at the lyrics of Bob Dylan as like kind of deep poetry, and you know, I think there's a like from a kind of, you know, my perspective, I could see there's an aspect of Bob Dylan where he encourages that and he wants that, but
100%.
But at the same time, he kind of resents it, and he's like, oh, I'm just writing, you know, folk songs or something.
Oh no, he like, what was it about Blood on the Tracks? He was asked like, is this autobiographical? And he says, no.
Yeah, right.
Which is hilarious. Like,
yeah,
there's nothing of value about my life and experience in this, which deeply encourages all the, you
know, right, exactly, yeah. Everyone to engage in. So okay, but what was your
so my initial yeah. narrative is Bob Dylan kind of starts off. I think it's probably the popular conception of him. He is this folk singer. I think our guys will probably wear his first folk album is just like a pure folk songs, and then he like the next albums he kind of smuggles in like all his narrative, you know, all of his stuff, which is kind of, you know, kind of a very classic story of like subversion where, oh, this guy can do folk music and we'll give him he gets a contract with Columbia, and then the second album is actually. Interesting. Like, it's interesting how his first albums weren't as well beloved critically or in terms of sales. You know, they're most like, I guess you can call them subversive or basically more like civil rightsy. And he obviously kind of smuggles all that stuff into it.
Yeah, well, that's like the famous, of course, especially what the times they are changing, which I always just grated on me. And it's
I still like it's a good song.
Really?
I like it. Yeah.
Okay.
It's a good song. But
yeah, I mean, I guess I could never separate it from like, it's funny, even when I was like, I would never say I was a libtard. I was definitely kind of like on that anarcho-syndicalist tier thing. And I always just found that whole scene just cheesy and cringe. And before I even had the word cringe, it made me cringe. Yeah, no, I mean, I get what you're saying, though, with the... Well, that's the infuriating part, too, is like...
Well, he released these albums in a very competitive era of music, like
right.
Too hyper-competitive. But none of these really hit number one, these initial ones. They would hit go platinum, but like years down the line when they had been achieved, like the critics had assessed them as like the best and
all. Speaking of critics, I was thinking of John Ashbery. I don't know if you've heard of him. He's one of these like degenerate poet types, and anyway, that would like that's the kind of person that was promoting a lot of this stuff at the time. Anyway, sorry, go on.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
So. I also kind of want to talk about. So for Highway 61 Revisited, wasn't that the one where the band was just like backups?
That was, I believe, Highway 61 Revisited. At least that was on the tour.
They toured with the band a lot.
That's the famous Judas exclamation in the tour in the show in Manchester. You know, the this was like this iconic moment. I can't.
Oh, where he comes out with the electric guitar thing.
Yeah, yeah. That was like it was with the band.
Really? I didn't know it was with the band. Yeah,
that was that.
So he kind of gets in like the skin suit stuff where he's like. His Bob Dylan is like a Jew in a skin suit,
right?
And I think like
and a cowboy hat, and a skin suit.
And yes. I think he's like very aware of it. It's interesting. It's like he's doing the bit because he's alienated from it because of like everybody knows he's kind of he doesn't hide really being Jewish all that much, and everybody kind of gets it and knows he's not like a folk musician traditionally.
Right.
But that gives him like, oh, I'm alienated, therefore I have like this artsy thing, which I think kind of why folk music isn't as influenced by Bob Dylan as like popular music is by Bob Dylan. Like the modern folk music is pretty detached from like the Dylan-y stuff.
Well, that's my question too, is like, well, one of the questions in the background here is like, what even is modern folk music? Right? Like, does it even exist? Or
well, it's like very hyper-traditionalist. Like, if you listen to like something like, well, I guess like, I don't want to say it's not modern, more like Stan Rogers or something like that. It's like,
I don't know who that,
Yeah, it's very hyper-traditionalist. Like, I think it's folk music, I think, because
I know like, quote, country music, but half of that is like, I mean, that's, you know, Negroes on... You know,
and so Red Solo cups and trucks.
It's just very strange. A very strange thing that's happened to quote country music, which is like the closest thing that I'm aware of to see. I don't know who you said Stan Rogers.
Yeah, he's Canadian, but it's
okay. But yeah, so is the band, which I didn't know. Yeah. They're like all Canucks too, which is funny. Creedence Clearwater Revival. What's his
John Fogerty?
John Fogerty, like born on a bayou, actually was born in California. You know?
Yeah,
whatever.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of skin suit stuff, but I think the band is probably is like the purest folk music thing. Even though it's not quite, I would say it's more of a rock band, but
well, I think at a certain point, I mean, that's the kind of like, you know, the I don't know how much of it is just my own personal constitution, how much of it is having my brain warped by modernity. I always liked electric instruments and drums and upbeat tempos more than at least American style guitar, acoustic guitar type folk music. I think European folk music is like a different thing to me. That's like almost a different kind of genre. But I always thought that, you know, I mean, like, you know, it just appeals to me more.
Yeah, no, CCR is real good. It's like,
that's what I'm saying, And it's definitely, you could say like, okay, it's not, I mean, it's an interesting question, like what constitutes folk or, you know, what is a folk and how do folks make music?
Well, right? To that, you were talking about like how Bob Dylan was kind of promoted to the HNC of folk music. Like the media declared him the folk music guy.
Right.
And then you get the thing where, oh yeah, like he comes out, he can't use electric instruments, he's the folk music guy, but like folk music had already been that ship had sailed like
decades before. I mean, that's the thing
too. Like
like it wasn't even.
It's kind of very main. It's like a manufactured thing. Like right. Bob Dylan's alienation from folk music is also manufactured to grant legitimacy
to that kind of artistic. Well, that was the thing. Was like the folk scene that he emerged of in the 60s was very much like a reactionary thing.
The band is a reactionary band, right?
Right. Yeah. That's exactly, it's a reaction to the reaction almost. Like, because at that point is that you had like the early rock and roll was basically just, you know, a slight update on like that actual kind of the
1.5 speed blues.
Exactly. Yeah. And it wasn't even I mean, that was essentially, there was a direct line. I mean, at that point, like you could say, I know, Mike says, like, I hate Delta Blues. And I actually kind of like Delta Blues.
Yeah, no, Delta Blues is fine.
But the thing about it is basically it was literally just, you know, shit that like people would play and noodle on, and it would just happen to get recording because we just invented recording in the 1920s or whatever. So it was literally just people doing the same thing that they had pretty much always done, more or less in a direct line, and then it just happened to get recorded. Then recording technology took off in a way, and you got more sophisticated ability. You got, you know, 8 tracks and stuff like this, and all of a sudden you're dealing with music that never organically existed except to be recorded, which was basically new in human history. And that's where I think the folk that folk scene that Bob Dylan, Robert Zimmerman was as you say, appointed to be HNC of, was like, no, we're going to deliberately react against that whole ethos by going, you know, producing music that didn't need any of those kinds of accoutrements. The problem is a lot of that music, including Bob Dylan's own stuff, again, only ever existed to be recorded. I mean, even if he could play it live, like it wasn't some kind of organic continuity. It was itself a product of the same modern processes, just in a different way. I don't know if I'm making sense.
No, I CCR. Well, CCR is like a weird spot because it's a very corporate thing. But like the band is much less so. I think that's probably the best example of like legit the folk music reaction. I think it's just to put it much more simply, I think it's you keeping the electric instruments, but like we're just returning to the roots of like just the subject,
right, well, that's
the subject
I mean.
Matter and
exactly,
not,
yes.
not being like poppy.
Yeah.
It was like the first of many reactions against like poppy sounds, you know. No like blue suede shoes type stuff, you know. It's very much like also I think country did this, had the same thing where country did like went into a turn of being very poppy in this mm-hmm. in the 50s, like, and then came back to like in almost in the same like people. I mean, Hank Williams did both like the Rhinestone stuff and the
right.
And the you know, Shoot Your Lawyer stuff, you know, like and I think the band is like is kind of the same thing where it's like anti Elvis kind of.
Yes,
I think that's probably the first like delineation we would draw a line between like what popular music was. It's like this is the post Elvis era. He was still alive, but he wasn't influential.
Which is also kind of funny because Elvis himself was very much like, you know, he was a talented acoustic guitarist who then kind of went off in this pure Hollywood, you know, pure artifice.
Yeah,
type direction.
Became like a movie actor.
Yeah,
made like. What, like 30 movies? There's something I've seen. Like,
I've never sat all the way through an Elvis movie. I don't think I ever will. I know I've seen clips from dozens at least.
Yeah,
you know, like, I'm gonna go. The thing is, Eddie Murphy does a funny bit in Raw about like, you know, Elvis, like, I'm gonna cook the eggs or whatever. Anyway,
a lot of cry chops. You're watching a lot of cry chops.
That's just how they fought in the 60s.
Yeah,
exactly. Star Trek, same thing.
Yeah.
But anyway, yeah. So then I guess at a certain point, right around then is like as a part of that. We referred to it, but maybe I'm sure we have Zoomers in the audience. Who are like, what the fuck are you talking about with Judas? So there was on the tour, I believe, to support Highway 61 Revisited. It was which is, you know, sort of his like that was his the recording of that broke with this ethos where he's like, oh, I'm going to use electric instruments. We're going to go in this kind of more overtly rock as opposed to folk style direction. That he was at a show in Manchester in the United Kingdom where he started playing they brought out all the electric stuff and someone in the crowd was immortalized having yelled Judas, and you can hear there's a bunch of bootlegs of this particular. It's a very famous bootleg show, and because a lot of people were recording it illegally in the audience,
which was the culture at the time where
right.
that wasn't yeah. disincentivized.
No, not at all.
They wanted that's the authenticity stuff, is that we want these tapes passed around of our live shows. Also because I think live shows at the time were like tiny.
Yeah, right. I mean,
this is before stadium rock ever was even conceptualized. So, like, the biggest thing you get would be a Beatles show, but it's that would still be like locally, at where, like it wasn't like back then. Like Madison Square Garden was the only stadium where you could like
right,
do a show.
Right.
It was, like the, and so recordings were encouraged to, get the word out, sell records.
This also, have you seen, I wanted to talk about it a little bit. It's not a great film, but it is kind of interesting for, with the I'm Not There, this kind of like quasi biopic of Dylan.
I don't think I haven't seen it. I have seen quasi biopic of Dylan, which is, the story of Dewey Cox.
I don't know that
you
one.
You haven't seen, it's not a Dylan biopic. It's like a satirical work on, it's like Will Ferrell and, Steve Brule.
Oh yeah, right. I never saw this, but yeah, it's sort of like a take on the, kind of like This Is Spinal Tap sort of thing.
But it's a musician's biopic, and he does like a fake Dylan period. Yeah, it's like a This Is Spinal Tap, but it's basically doing a musician biopic knockoff, and it's interesting because it's very funny, and the it kind of starts in like the Elvis period, obviously, of this fictional rock star, and it's interesting that like when you talk about the first delineation in country music or like popular music is after the Elvis stuff finishes, he does like a 2-minute Bob Dylan parody. And then it's like the next era of music, Bob Dylan he's not alive. This era is the line of not being Elvis anymore for sure. And you also mentioned, I wanted to back to, it reminds me of a very funny story during this first era of like Delta Blues being recorded.
Yeah.
You've ever heard of Scrapper Blackwell?
No.
So he's probably one of the first one of these guys, you know, gets his stuff recorded, does very well, you know, ended up, you know, he was doing this music, performing forever, made almost no money because there was no money in playing this kind of music at the time, or any kind of music really, outside of like very formal orchestras and things like that.
Even then, it's, you know, typically not, unless your first violin at the Vienna Philharmonic or something.
Yeah.
Sorry, go on.
And there's, if you look in his biography or even like the YouTube stuff of his songs, which I enjoy, I like this kind of blues. People are like, oh, what a shame the white man never let him, like, you know, make him recording or never gave him a bunch of money to do this.
The audience can't see, but my eyes are rolling.
And his story is, it is weird because you look at his discography, it's all like privately recorded weird stuff that just ends up on YouTube or gets sold somehow, probably to benefit his estate, maybe. We don't, you know, it's hard to tell. And so his story is, I think it was Columbia, just like Bob Dylan. It was like 1954 or whatever. He recorded a session for them. They liked it because they could tell it was good. He was good. He was a talented musician. He was offered a contract, signed it. On the way home from the, either he went to celebrate on the way home or he went straight home, he was stabbed in an alleyway. And that was that. You know, he's nothing. You know, just died.
Yeah, that sucks.
Yeah, but it's not. It's not Columbia's fault.
Right. Yeah, right.
It's that he was recording it in like Delta, Mississippi Delta, circa, you know,
19 whatever.
Yeah.
20 something.
And that was in the, you know, if you do want to blame the white man, you get to say it because we didn't police those areas.
White supremacy wasn't good enough at being supreme.
Yeah, well, white supremacy refused to put the boot on the neck in these little towns and parts
of town.
That's
the result.
Yeah, it's that you get like, well, this guy.
Maybe it was mutual combat. Maybe.
It was probably a duel.
Yeah. Oh, goodness.
So we're talking about in Bob Dylan in this era.
Oh, I wanted to say, on the Judas note, just one last. So this film, I'm Not There, which is like, I don't know, if some of you for some reason are like still really into Bob Dylan and somehow haven't seen this film, maybe check it out, I guess. But it's formally interesting, even if it's not ultimately that great. It's about the myth of Bob Dylan the name Bob Dylan never appears. Like, none of the characters are named Bob Dylan, and he himself or aspects of his life are played by different characters, including like a little black boy, which is just a little too on the nose. Who I think he calls himself Woody Guthrie, and it's just kind of silly. But there's the scene in Manchester, to give a kind of flavor of like it's sort of, you know, the it's about the cultural impact and so on. Was when they do the electric guitar bit and somebody yells out Judas, they remove from their instrument cases like automatic machine guns and just like start murdering people in the audience. It's sort of like the vibe, you know, sort of how this was received by people in that.
That's
kind
funny.
Of a movement. Yeah, I that was sort of a highlight of the film. But anyway, yeah. So that really brought, I guess, that first phase of those were silly names. What was it? Starbuck, Toolington, or something like?
I don't remember. Yeah, I don't want to read it again. But yeah, like the touring under fake names, but not really a fake name. And
right. And then I guess he went through this kind of electric quasi rock phase, and then there was Blood on the Tracks, which is
there's kind of a gap, right? So to kind of go into my kind of narrative before. So there's this weird period with.
You mentioned in prep. I didn't realize this. He actually did a Christian thing twice.
Yes.
He was born again twice. I knew about the famous.
So this was post
in the 80s.
This was post on the Tracks. So he took a break to do country music. This was his first, and no one liked it, and no one cared that much. And this was his return to form. But Blood on the Tracks, as my favorite, I think, Dylan album, I have a narrative on it, which is so this one, I don't know if he toured the band to promote this one as well, which is weird because this is an acoustic album, so Dylan kind of was like sort of return to form. I think it's his best work. It's very folk music-y. It's probably the most genuine I think he's ever really been. He's talking about like he's got a divorce issues and stuff, and it's kind of like a universally beloved. It's like the 9th rated all time album, whatever. One thing that's not as well known, but is not unknown, is that you talk about that New York scene. He credits this. You know who credits this album to? You've ever heard this? A man named
the hero of the war.
No. A man named Norman Rabin.
Like Rabin, like,
yeah,
like Rabin, rabbi.
Yeah,
like yeah. Rabin. No, I don't know who that is, but like instantly, sure. Okay.
He was born in Eastern Ukraine, the youngest of six children of Yiddish descent.
Oh boy.
Son of Shalom Almakim, who did not write Fiddler on the Roof, but wrote a character that inspired it. So very much in like the old Yiddish art scene.
All
right. He's a famous painter in his own right. He's most known for being like Bob Dylan's muse for this album. And when I talk about we're dealing with a better class of Jew here, this is what I mean. This guy is obviously born in like Ukraine, a little more harder stuff, and he is a kind of a bit of a, you know, he's a interesting. He paints about intuition and feeling. In contemporary, was very conceptualist at the time, so he obviously, you know, you can see like the destroying any kind of objective standards of beauty. But when I talk about what we're dealing with a better class of subversive here, he required all of his students and himself to first learn like photoreal drawing before you jump into doing weird degenerate dumb stuff. You have to have the baseline of talent.
Sure. I mean, that's 100% that's standard. Yeah.
Yeah. And he basically, so Bob Dylan has an art career also, like, but no one really cares too much.
Sure.
As a result of him going to this guy for tutelage.
Yeah.
Who is this very extreme, like, teacher in the photoreal style before you can get into all your weird stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where you get like this kind of, it's all, you know, his intuition. You can really feel it, and you can. It's a great album. There's a lot of stuff. Tangled Up in Blue is great.
Oh yeah, right. That's kind of like prosperity. Yeah, right. It's like the like a quasi prosperity gospel type thing, right?
No. It's more of a it's just like a love song with a girl, and they're constantly breaking up.
No. That's the song. I thought you meant about Rabin.
No, there's a lot of Rabins.
Okay,
never this mind. This guy didn't have much of a career outside of in this art scene, mm-hmm. even though he's famous in this art scene. And Bob Dylan.
Okay, I'm actually thinking
4 years after the album, yeah. He had a heart attack. 4 years after the album, okay. And died. Yeah. He didn't have the. I mean, he had a lot of influence and was very subversive, but he didn't really do much outside like that you would know about. He's not a household name for sure. This is where we get to the turn with Bob Dylan. So Bob Dylan got, after Tangled in Blue, Bob Dylan has a couple more good folk music albums. I think Desire is very good. It's a mixture of his folky albums and his protesty stuff,
mm-hmm.
which they all kind of were. But
sure.
It's good. You know, it's a lot of harmonica. I like the harmonica. Acoustic harmonica is like, because that shows the level of actual talent. Like
I was going to say, this was my next question is sort of, or one of my questions is like, because he doesn't really play. I've seen him live, and I mean, nowadays he just basically doesn't even.
Oh, I don't want to skip. You want to? I was kind of saying, have you seen a recent live show?
Not that recent.
I've seen a live show. I've seen Bob Dylan play in the last 5 years.
Okay.
Let's do it now. It was the worst show I ever went to in my whole life. I'm so pissed. I spent like $75.
Yeah.
It was pre-Red Pill, thank God. Or I would have had a you know, but I mean, he can barely talk.
Now.
Yeah, he can't talk, and he tries to sing anyway. It sounds like a garble. You don't recognize even the song except occasionally. You could feel the audience when like the band would play like the opening of a song that people knew.
Yeah.
Would get all like, oh, this is he starts singing it.
Like, oh God. Yeah. Well, okay. So my
But
question...
he will play the harmonica bit is competent. He's good at harmonica.
Okay, that's what I was gonna ask.
He's a bad musician.
He's never that's the thing that gets
but he's
me
a
is
good
like,
harmonica. Okay. Or good enough harmonica.
Good enough
how
harmonica.
Do you tell a bad harmonica player? But I enjoy when he plays the harmonica.
Sure. Because like even the acoustic guitar. So to me, the contrast here, which like okay, granted.
Oh, he's in a jazz, like way in the jazz
okay,
now.
But like,
so like the band's just playing jazz. He's kind of hanging out, saying stuff you can't understand. You cannot understand a word. Didn't understand a word that man said. I asked my dad, who's a big dummy, like, do you think he was like drunk or on like. Anxiety
like, no,
medication.
That's just how he sounds.
That's
no.
just how the man sounds. It's the fact he's still touring is
it's insane. I mean, at least say what you will about like the Rolling Stones,
and everyone knows
to
it.
Do it. Like, yeah, people know, and they still go to see the show. It blows my mind.
You know what pissed me off is 6 months previous, I saw James Taylor.
Okay.
Live. I've seen Fire and Ice.
Yeah, no, I know. Great. Yeah, of course. He sounded good,
like the record.
Yeah.
He sounded like the record.
That's your standard. What you think of with like boomer musicians who are still touring.
Yeah.
And Mick Jagger still sounds like Mick Jagger too. That's what I was going to say. It's like,
and also Bob Dylan's not like a very like demanding singer.
No, it's like, yeah, right. The stuff even that was on the recordings from the 60s.
James Taylor
like
was a heroin addict.
Right.
And he kicked it and he's great. Bob Dylan got like one car accident.
So that was what I was going to say is like the contrast. Now, I'm not a huge Joni Mitchell fan, but like you listen to like her contributions to The Last Waltz or you know her album, you know, Blue is the only one that I've ever listened to like basically at all. You could tell like, okay, she's a talented musician. Like she commands the guitar. She, you know, say whatever, you know, it's not like my thing. I don't like particularly enjoy it, but she's like she has a very beautiful voice and she can, you know, play the guitar really well. She does interesting stuff musically and she executes it well. None of the above has ever applied to Bob Dylan, and it's like to the extent there's any kind of musical, you know, like the whatever it is, the like the coda at the end of Tangled Up in Blue is just an all-time great kind of little ditty. He had nothing to do with that. That was all the session musicians, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah, it was hard to know what's what, true, with Bob Dylan. But I will say, like, I do think a lot of the work is done to, like, because obviously there is, like, some level of media and critics making it better than it is. But it is good. I think harmonica and acoustic guitar together will get you there.
It's a great vibe, yes.
Yeah, and the fact that he is at least on stage when in the back of the day doing it at the same time.
Right.
He would do the playing the harmonica in the rack while he's...
I remember the
and that is a talent. That is a difficult thing
seeing
to do.
He did play the harmonica, and he could barely sing. It wasn't even really, but the harmonica he could still do even. And this was more like 10, 15 years ago, so it was not probably to quite the same extent of degeneration that I can only imagine. I can only imagine how it is now. Yeah. So okay. So you. What was it? So you liked. What was it after?
The Desire.
Desire. Okay.
Very similar to Tangled. It's like the Tangled Blue Part 2 or 3.
Yeah, I have to tell you. I'll have to check that out. I never really listened to Desire. I tried listening to some of his like Oh Mercy's. Like,
you ever heard you ever heard Hurricane?
Is that from?
That's from Desire.
Okay.
Yeah.
Of course I know that. But that's another shit lib kind of.
Yeah,
like,
which I kind of want to talk about because that was one of my earliest red pills. When I was like reassessing all this,
so that was from Desire.
Yeah, and it's one of my earliest red pills. And when I was currently kind of reassessing like things I believed about culture and everything, I like looked back into this and like I had seen a pattern of like things I assumed that turned out to be, you know, not true or exaggerated and many court cases from 1960s.
Oh no, you know what I do? I of course.
And this is of course one of them where like like he OJ'd, he did it, like 100% did it, like, and like they got his ass for doing it. And right. I don't know why he did it. And the whole thing, the narrative is like, why would a world famous professional boxer rob a bar and shoot people? Well,
because he's a Negro.
No, but then I watched like my life later. It's like, wait, why are these NFL players like doing the same
exactly,
thing?
Exactly, exactly, exactly.
It's like, oh yeah, they're just like that.
Yeah, yeah, that's funny. Yeah.
He like visited him in jail too, and that is like the earliest, probably more like just profiting off this guy.
Well, maybe he believed it. I mean, I'm sure he was also.
I'm
a
sure
prophet,
he believed
but
it.
Probably
yeah.
just you know.
I'm sure. Yeah. No, I mean the TV said he didn't do it, right? So
right.
Like,
yeah,
well,
yeah.
Compared him to a Buddha figure.
He called him a Buddha figure.
So like, Ruben sits like a Buddha in a 10-foot cell.
No.
Which is like to emphasize like his calm nature, and I'm sure his I don't know if a boxer is in jail is not punching people. I'd be surprised if he wasn't, to be honest, but
all right. Other highlights. I kinda liked Modern Times. I think it was hit and miss. Did you spend
I haven't. I listened to after we finished like the
I didn't realize
after Tangled Up in Blue and Desire, late '70s. Bob Dylan's Born Again.
Yes, right. Yes. Yeah. This was the, and I guess, but, okay, you said it was twice, so there were two periods, though? Is this the first one?
This is the first period of being born again, or vaguely. Like, the second period's more fuzzy. This period is very clearly, which is funny, because you wouldn't think he would pick like Ronald Reagan's religion, but I guess you're free to choose, right? I think this is also like the end. Like this first period is the end of Bob Dylan, the subversive, like,
yes.
This is when he just starts like floating on his money. for like he's kind of just doing whatever at this point. Notably, because he's not a Gentile, he has no qualms about leaving his kids money. I saw this. He left his kids all trust funds that are massive because he doesn't want them to ever have to work if they don't want to. That's his thing. Unlike Gentiles, who all are, every Gentile celebrity is like, oh, I'm not going to give my kid that much money.
Yeah.
As a Jew, he has no qualm giving his kids much money, which I found. That's probably the only Jewish thing that kind of endured. Or not, because things get weird after this period with what he's
doing.
Well,
I remember in the film I was talking about, I'm Not There, this is, he's portrayed as like a kind of Christian preacher type, like a kind of televangelist almost, is sort of like the vibe that they stick with this period in his
thing. Interesting. Yeah. I wonder if it was like, I see, it's hard to never know with how genuine anything is.
Exactly.
But like, I can see like, especially a Jew who gets very wealthy in the 60s and 70s, like very wealthy, deciding like this Reagan thing ain't too bad, you know.
Yeah, I'm sure that's part of it. I after have the Six-Day War, like,
I gotta throw, you know.
So here's my like,
because Jimmy Carter really didn't bail us out in the Six-Day War, and you know, if we're gonna,
maybe we gotta bid on a different,
yeah, you know.
My thing with Dylan, and this goes all the way back to like, people call, sometimes his lyrics are described as acidic. I think they're never better than when he is talking about how shitty of a person he is. Like, you know, I don't want to rag too hard on the man, not because he's not a shitty person, but because he does have some insight. He does have some amount of self-awareness.
A better class of Jew.
He's a better class of Jew. That's exactly right. Yeah. And so like, I could also see like definitely like Reagan tax stuff. You could, if you're wealthy from all this kind of thing. Like, yeah, absolutely. I'm sure that's in the picture. But I also can very easily see like, you know, he lived through the 60s. He was at the forefront of all this degeneracy. He's seen, you know, the drug addiction and the degeneracy and the, you know, underage girls and all that kind of shit for decades at that point. He, you know, tried to have this marriage. It kind of blew up in his face.
He tried a few marriages.
It blew up. They all blew up in his face. You know, I could see someone at a certain point in their life, you have wealth and success, but you're not happy. You're kind of miserable. You're like, man, I've done some shitty stuff and I know a bunch of shitty people, and trying to reach out for some kind of redemption. I don't want to like say that, oh, that's just fake. That's just a grift. Like I could see how someone, even if he's imperfect, even if it doesn't end up taking or for whatever reason, you know, genetic, ethnic, whatever that, you know, it can't take to some extent. Nevertheless, like I wouldn't want to say that it's just completely, because you can see it in the history and in his, you know, writing about himself. I when he writes about how shitty of a person he is, I'll tell that more in a second on Modern Times. Like, I believe him, you know what I mean? And I can believe that he has the introspective ability to be able to articulate that.
Oh, for sure. And I when he's doing Tangled Up in Blue is like kind of this, I think one of these.
Yeah, very much of that similar kind of thing. Yeah.
So there's a funny thing we mentioned with his marriages. This is just a great story. In the era before cell phones, he had this Italian girlfriend. One of his many failed relationships, and because there were no like cell phones, she was like moved to America, or moved back to Italy and then back to America, and he just wasn't aware of it. She hadn't like called him yet, and he was like one point, I think after Tangled Up in Blue came or Blood on the Tracks came out, he like burned a little bit like that. Touring time, or you know, it's after the album came out, he's the biggest thing in the world. He goes to Italy to go like find her.
Oh no!
Which is just a funny story.
Yeah,
but
before cell phones, yeah, exactly.
Which is a thing you could do is you could travel to a foreign country to meet somebody, and they just weren't there.
Yeah. So he goes to this born again Christian phase, and I think people kind of just like. I don't know. It's also a weird time, I guess, for music generally. I mean, if you think about the 80s and new wave, like everything, everybody's doing stuff with synthesizers. Everybody has kind of moved on to a large extent from... He's doing gospel stuff, and it's a different...
And it's not that great.
Yeah, I've never really...
He gets exposed when he does this thing where he goes to other genres. He went country music before Blood on the Tracks, where he gets exposed by not being as good.
Right.
Because there is no, like... They refuse to push any other folk singer. So he became the HNC of folk music, like the guy. And that was purely because they wouldn't push anybody else, you know?
Well, they liked his politics, right? Yeah. And of course, he's a member of the tribe.
And of course, like, folk music is music for, like, the people they don't like, you know? yeah, you know, and I think they want to, like, they'll give you Delta blues, but they're not going to give you, like,
right
Delta blues or, you know, like, from the other half of the Delta, because half the Delta is like still white. They don't, you know, they're talking about like the white half of the Delta.
Yeah.
You know, if you're down there, it's not all, you know, it's what it is. Like the South is like not 100% black. Unless you ask the media, you know, the only jobs for white guys were policemen and DA, apparently.
Oh man. So, right. So the '80s and it was just a kind of a weird,
also this is when he started doing like, he had all this money. I think also this is when he did marry his wife who he stayed married to up until this point, correct?
Are they still, I don't know. Yeah. I would have to, I don't know his, like all of the details of his, relationship history. This is a job for Wikipedia.
Yeah.
Personal life. Romantic relationships.
Carol. Oh, that Italian girl from was a daughter of one of the founders of the CSA, Communists United States. You know, the Communist.
Oh,
Party,
like CPUSA.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that's. I mean, all right. So she like Italian or like, you know, Italian.
It's a good question. Italian immigrants from the 30s are generally kind of a certain kind of fucking people, aren't they? They all end up either popes or Bob Dylan's girlfriend, apparently.
Okay. So. Okay, so his backup singer Carolyn Dennis, married 1986, divorced 1992. I guess that's the last. The marriage and child remained a closely guarded secret until the publication of Howard Sounds' biography, Down the Highway, in 2001.
Yeah. I guess I'm mixing up, but I know he. Oh God, I love Wikipedia. I'm on the same page you are. Dylan's a supporter of Chabad Lubavitch. So the Reagan thing might actually come back into play at this point.
There you go. I mean, that makes perfect sense. That's too funny.
Oh, his son's a bar mitzvah. Yeah, he's back.
Oh, he's back. He's back in. Okay, that's fun. So by 1984, okay, let's just read. Here's the religious belief section of Wikipedia.
Which,
growing up in Hibbing, Minnesota, Dylan and his family were part of the area's small, close-knit Jewish community. And in May 1954, Dylan had his bar mitzvah. Around the time of his 30th birthday in 1971, Dylan visited Israel. You called it.
Of course.
And also met Rabbi Meir Kahan. I don't know.
Meir Kane.
That's the fucking guy. Okay, I was like, I don't know. That's how you spell it, Meir Kane. Okay. Founder of the New York-based Jewish Defense League, which is like the terrorist organization that like literally killed people.
Yeah.
We're just going to move right along. I love how Wikipedia just doesn't even like, okay. I guess they link to the Jewish, so if you're really interested, you could follow that thread.
Gunfights with Jewish Defense League and the American Nazi Party. Like, they were like, that was a wild era of the 70s where they were, oof.
In the late 1970s, Dylan converted to Christianity. In November 1978, guided by his friend Mary Alice Arts, Dylan made contact with the Vineyard School of Discipleship. This is one of these mega churches, isn't it? I think that's like some kind of...
Well, it's in California.
Yeah, but it's some weird thing. Charismatic renewal and neo-charismatic evangelicals. This is...
That's very Reagan-y.
Yeah.
California evangelical new stuff. Yeah.
Vineyard pastor Ken Gullickson has recalled, quote, Larry Myers and Paul Edmond went over to Bob's house and ministered to him. He responded by saying, yes, he did in fact want Christ in his life. And he prayed that day and received the Lord. From January to March 1979, Dylan attended the Vineyard Bible study classes in Reseda, California. By 1984, Dylan was distancing himself from the, quote, born again label. He told Kurt Loder of Rolling Stone, quote, I've never said I'm born again. That's just a media term. I don't think I've been an agnostic. I've always thought there was a superior power, that this is not the real world, and that there's a world to come, end quote. Didn't he say something about Satan, though, at one point, too? Am I, like, hallucinating this?
In songs, he'll do biblical stuff. It's hard to tell what's real.
Biblical stuff, yeah, but didn't he say, like, I pray to Satan or something? I mean, I'm just making that up. I could be wrong. I know there was like, you know, so, Sammy Davis Jr. did the, you know, telling Jerry
and
Seinfeld.
And it's funny
like,
what he said. Oh, but in 1989 and 91, the next thing is supported Chabad Lubavitch, appeared in a Chabad Lubavitch telethon to raise money for Chabad Lubavitch.
But here's the thing with, in 1997, he told David Gates of Newsweek, here's the thing with me and the religious thing. This is the flat out truth. I find the religiosity and the philosophy in the music. That's such a dumb midwit thing to say.
No, like, but like the best part is that the next part is, I don't hear to rabbis, preachers, or evangelists. Next paragraph, Chabad Lubavitch fundraiser.
Yeah. I mean, it's just, exactly. Quote, I don't find it anywhere else. Song like Let Me Rest on a Peaceful Mountain or I Saw the Light, that's my religion. I don't adhere to rabbis, preachers, evangelists, all of that. I've learned more from the songs than I've learned from any of this kind of entity. The songs are my lexicon. I believe the songs. And then literally next sentence, Dylan has supported the Chabad Lubavitch movement. I'm going to do the Chabad. That's Chabad.
So he's a Chabad guy.
He's a Chabad guy. Yes, yeah. Bob Dylan Chabad guy.
Yeah. But this is where we get into how true it might have been, because as a Chabad guy, you wouldn't assume he'd have a Christmas album in 2009. So this is like,
or you would, because Christmas is just what are the songs in the album? Is all Santa Claus shit? Are there any like actual Christmas Christian?
That's a very good question,
right? Let's see what the. I love you guys liking the on the fly yeah. show prep. This is it's all right. It's sort of a anyway.
Well, there's so much Bob Dylan weird stuff you got to fall in like Wikipedia holes to find.
Indeed. All right. What was it? 2007. You said
2009.
2009. Christmas in the Heart. Christmas in the Heart. I want to see the song track listing on this. Here Comes Santa Claus. Do You Hear What I Hear? Okay. Do You Hear What I Hear is yeah. actually kind of religious. Winter Wonderland. Hark the Herald Angels Sing. All right. No. So he does have some good religion. Good for Bob Dylan. Good for Bob Dylan. Yeah. To actually have some actual like religious Christmas, yeah. Christmas music. First Noel, Little Town of Bethlehem. Yeah, that's all right.
He's doing it. It's not a. I mean, it's a Christmas album. It's what it is.
Sure, whatever.
It's not. I've listened to it because it was like the new Bob. So Bob Dylan released a lot of trash.
Yes.
Ever since like 1981, I think he's been releasing everything he ever does.
Yeah, they had. I haven't heard it, but I know that he. I learned the other day that he has like, what was it, More Blood, More Tracks, like a bunch of outtakes and
oh yeah, everything. Yeah. Oh, he's basically doing like the old rocker thing where you just put on all the stuff he didn't use. Which is fine. Yeah, that's part of the group. But this was different music. And the funny thing with that gospel thing, we talk about being kind of legit, is he still plays like the gospel BS too. Like he got real into jazz, but also like he'll just do a gospel song, which is probably the best part of the show because it's like six black ladies doing it, not him.
Right.
You know. It's great. It was actually there's like a level of musicality there that
he just can't. He's not capable of anymore. Yes, or maybe was never capable of. It just
yeah.
One of those I mentioned was Modern Times, which I actually do kind of like, especially what was it the so I was saying the last this was 2006, 2006, and the last track Ain't Talking, which the first time I was re-listening to it recently, like post Red Pill. Obviously, and it just made me think of the Book of Esther. So here's the first two. I'll just read the first two verses here. The second and the the second and the third. Yeah, they say prayer has the power to help. So pray for me, mother. In the human heart, an evil spirit can dwell. I'm trying to love my neighbor and do good unto others, but oh, mother, things aren't going well. Ain't talking, just walking. I'll burn that bridge before you cross. Heart burning, still yearning. There'll be no mercy for you once you've lost. Now I'm all worn down by weeping. My hearts are filled with tears. My lips are dry. If I catch my opponents ever sleeping, I'll just slaughter them where they lie. Like, admission against interest. I believe you.
No, that's also a trip to Jewish ethics. Like,
that's fine. What I'm saying. That's like a Book of Esther.
Chabad.
Thing.
Yeah, for sure. And Chabad's obsessed with Esther.
I didn't know that.
No, they're big fans. They call like Jared Kushner was like an Esther figure.
Oh my god.
That's not even like.
I mean, he was. So I guess that yes, they're not wrong. Holy crap! I didn't know that. but no, that's what I'm saying is like, and the song, if you listen to it, I'm not going to get in any kind of copyright trouble.
Yeah,
anything,
no, we're not even going to
do that.
Man, it's still alive and his lawyers are, I'm sure, excellent.
But,
can you imagine a better lawyer than Bob Dylan's,
from Ziegblatt and Bernstein and
like a 60s lawyer, 60s rockers have the best lawyers in the world and then he's Bob Dylan.
Exactly. Like, yeah. But if you listen to the song, like it's a very moody, very well orchestrated, and it's one of the few even on the and generally like the music, the backing bands that he has are really good, which is what prompted that question I was asking earlier about like how much of it has he ever really been musically responsible for. Like, yes, I have seen him with my own eyes play the harmonica, in fact, quite well for whatever value, but it works. The guitar and to say nothing of anything else. Like, I mean, maybe a few notes on the keyboard, but he's not doing the cool keyboard riffs either. So, I don't know.
His painting is actually quite good.
His painting?
It's not bad.
Like, better than George Bush?
Oh, yeah. For sure.
Oh, man. I have to see that, too. That's funny. Yeah.
At the gallery. It's in all the galleries.
And then he's doing this thing, too, as you said. It's like, just now, he just kind of... It's just like endless waves of shit.
And that's what the Christmas thing was like a break in that. So my parents got very excited and bought it for us. Like, oh, this is like decent. also think I was in the iTunes era where buying an album was much less of an investment. Than,
right, right.
It's like six. It was $8.99. You know.
Did they buy you like a physical copy? Or?
No, no. They bought it for like their first gen iPod.
Played it for okay. Wow. So
they had, it was 2009. So.
Interesting. Yeah, so he's had
released... It's not that good. I mean, it's decent, but it's like, we just played, like, I'd rather listen to the actual, like, choir first.
Right,
Noel.
Of course.
So you listen to it like, twice. You're like, okay, well.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly. And then yeah. And then you don't need to, right. You know, this is a totally random thing, but it came up on I think it was either iTunes or Spotify a couple Christmases back, and Michael Bublé has, like, I'm not into that kind of music at all, like the adult contemporary, whatever, but his Christmas album is actually really good. And he has some of the religious stuff too. Right. It's quite nice.
Yeah, I think Christmas albums, the what makes a Christmas album good is being able to sing well.
And he can't. He does. But yeah, Bob Dylan has had releases. What is it? Since oh my god, Love and Theft. I remember when Love and Theft came out in 2001, and people were like, oh, it's the return to form. We're like, this sucks. Like, it was so bad. Actually, let me take a second out to read. So you took that was like maybe the good side of Bob Dylan's lyrics or the. His sort of ability to, you know, be honest and sort of how to say.
So Love and Theft 2001, that's like a Larry Silverstein joint or
what do you mean?
One of the Twin Towers.
Oh god, well that was the thing. Okay, so here we go. So here's some of the, what is this? Tweedledum and Tweedle, this is from the first, this is the first words in the album. This is the Tweedledum and Tweedledee, they're throwing knives into the tree, two big bags of dead man's bones, got their noses to the grindstone, living in the land of Nod, trusting their fate to the hands of God. They pass by so silently, Tweedledum and Tweedledee. It just goes on. There was something about olive oil.
It sounds about
is it? I thought it was about George W. Bush.
I was thinking third world.
Nah, I think it's, well, maybe.
I mean, yeah.
I mean, that's,
well, was it pre-9/11 or post-9/11? It's Bush and Gore. Okay,
that's what I'm saying. It's Bush and, it's, yeah, exactly. It's like, it's, he's doing a politics, like, in the dumbest way.
Yeah, well, you know, they're both dumb. Both sides are wrong.
Yeah, right? I mean, it's just, it was like, or the shit sandwich and the giant douche from South Park.
Yeah, yeah, really cutting.
Cutting?
Cutting, like, commentary.
Very. Oh, yeah, right, yes, incisive. Yeah. Yes, yes. It's just dumb, and it's just full of these, like, nonsensical, like, I remember, and I was, you know, when I was...
I mean, that's what, like, also, that's, like, very true to the civil rights movement. Like, that's kind of, like...
Yeah, that's the level of the, yes.
Their commentary, like, such as it was, wasn't that deep. Outside of, like, a couple speeches, like, written speeches for Martin Luther King, like, usually it's all, like, both parties are, they want to keep you down. It's like...
Right.
Okay, yeah. I mean, yes, but also, no, like, very much no, yeah.
Yeah, it's just bad, and a lot of it was just, I mean, it's just, so much of this was just bad, and I don't know, it's, who was that Jew writing for, the, I don't know, this is really going to narrow it down. There was Damon Linker, I remember, who, like, he's another Jew who converted to Christianity, and then, like, unconverted. You know this?
No.
Yeah, Damon Linker was a, I believe he converted to either, I think it's to Catholicism, and then, but then he was always, like, critical of the church, essentially, and he was always, he did this thing about the theocrats, and this book about, you know, how bad, like, this was, like, remember when, like, Christian right-wing conservatives were like, the big enemy under George W. Bush, like, the 2000... to early 2000s era thing, and now, of course, he, and then it was like, I guess Trump, he had a thing about how he, like, basically, like, seeing the rise of white nationalism made him realize that he was actually Jewish after all. Like, oh, okay, interesting.
Yeah.
As you know, as one does. But anyway, he had a piece in like a little while ago, talking about how, like, rock and roll is basically just a young man's game, and I guess he's a boomer spiritual boomer who likes what he calls classic rock, and was noting how basically, yeah, all of the, he goes through the list of, what is it, the Rolling Stones, The Who, Elton John, Billy Joel, R.E.M., Paul McCartney, Bob Dylan, David Bowie, Bruce Springsteen, and just like, yeah, all their output has been garbage, with a partial exception of David Bowie, who did actually put some pretty good stuff out, like, not long before he died.
Oh yeah, he's had a long career too.
He had a really long career. Oh, there were he had a definite downturn in like the, you know, late '70s into through the '90s. But then in his most recent work right before he died in 2016 was actually not bad. So yeah. Anyway, he was just talking about how, yeah, Bob Dylan just kind of, what has he said? There are interesting songs sprinkled across the half dozen or so albums he's released since 1997, but it'd be foolish to compare their quality to the string of enduring masterpieces. Enduring masterpiece, I don't know, from 1962 to 1966 or to Blood on the Tracks.
Also, there are a lot more than six albums. I think he's counting.
Now it's like, yeah, exactly.
There's like, Wikipedia, I don't think Wikipedia page even, I looked at like, even has them all. Like, they'll reference them other places, but they make a line, what is a Bob Dylan album?
Right.
And what is just like, we found an old master of XYZ, you know, this is a recording that was cut from this album, but later put in this album, but we'll release it as a cut from album one thing. Like, it's just, I mean, it's the same thing that like, every, you know, there's a million of these, what is it? What do you call them? Like the Rolling Stones re-releases of like,
oh yeah, right, and then yeah, the deluxe version with the extra whatever, and it's like one, yeah. I remember when they did a similar, it was like long after Kurt Cobain had died, they did a similar thing with Nirvana. They had like
the box
with like a couple tracks that had never actually been released, and it's like new Nirvana, so we would do like Tupac jokes. Yeah the music industry is just absolute garbage. I mean, maybe that's the ultimately the kind of the most interesting, because I think we're kind of wrapping
well,
up.
Well, also the story about doing it is kind of like the golden age of the power of the industry.
That's exactly what,
and then
yeah.
The music industry lost power, and Bob Dylan lost, they ran out of gas for sure.
And well, but the also as part of that, or just another way of looking at the same phenomenon, maybe is because you had up until the era of that early 60s folk, you know, maybe a little bit before, but not too much before. Essentially, music was all like all the Motown shit, like that's all session musicians under contract with big recording companies that owned every aspect of the production and distribution and mostly the composition as well. Then you had this era for a while of independent artists who were just kind of doing their own thing and finding some amount of success and building the industry and the kind of the public's engagement with it around the personalities of these individuals and bands.
Yeah. Right. I think the biggest fight that people know about is probably the CCR versus Fogerty fight.
Yes. Right. Yeah. Sure. Which I think we've mentioned before in the program, but yeah, the TLDR is exactly like Creedence Clearwater Revival was essentially owned by the recording company. John Fogerty wrote all the songs, performed all the songs, but you know, when he left the contract, the record company believed that all the material was theirs, and so when he was performing it and re-recording some of the stuff under his own name, they're like, "Well, you are plagiarizing." But the claim essentially was that he was plagiarizing himself,
which is funny because that is academically a thing.
You would think, yeah, exactly, of course, without the on paper, but they law fortunately, unfortunately, I don't know, it doesn't really matter, I guess, either way, but yeah, he won. John Fogerty, the man, won the fight against the recording company, and that brought to
set precedent.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That like you can't plagiarize yourself in this particular kind of way, and that artists do own their own output more so than had previously been the case, and that's when you see this real rise of I wouldn't say independent. Because like indie music is a completely different thing.
They're not owned by Sony.
Yeah, and I think the more it's not even just that. It's like the way that the public, the music consuming public,
well, it's not band based, persona based, not band based. Like yeah. Even like it's rare anymore. You'll see an artist that isn't just like somebody and like the band,
right?
You know.
Well, and even now the interesting thing though to me is like even like now. I mean, I don't pay attention to. I mean, it's just all garbage.
Well, also there are some. The problem is bands that don't do it suffer. Like, can you name one of the Kings of Leon?
No.
I can't.
I absolutely no idea. Right. Exactly. I can't even, I mean, I know Death Cab for Cutie, I know Death Cab for Cutie Guy, but I don't even remember what his name is.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, but now it's like, what is this, like Billie Eilish? I guess she, I don't even know, but all these people are also like, I mean, that's all very corporate too, and all, you know,
Taylor
Swift and all this kind
of. But they can move companies to the very least, right? Like Taylor Swift can change from was it Columbia to Sony or vice versa?
Something like that.
So I know Sony was
saying all this shit. Yeah. I mean, who cares? But Yeah, it's just and so, but the career, as you say, of Bob Dylan really, I think, kind of illustrates this movement, and then from kind of, you know, breaking out of that mold, that mold for the industry, then into a different kind of space where now, you know, the what you're consuming when you're consuming Bob Dylan product is the identity of Bob Dylan more so than anything else. Until now, where it's like kind of back into this thing where, you know, you have these slick teams of producers who are doing all of the, you know, composition and recording, and you're, you know, the person that they put, like, I don't think Beyonce doesn't write her own music, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like,
it's a bunch of Swedes, right, who write everything now,
something like that. Yeah. I know there's a couple groups. I know that the Neptunes is another one for the hip hop stuff, and there's a couple of, you know, people who know, you know, that with the actual, but there's only a couple of them. There's like, you know, two or three teams that do all of this shit that you hear on the radio. And that's just how it be. And so I don't
know.
Well,
it is more fun than the corporate controlled era, because if it still was like that, it would be worse, but you can see like these guys kind of implode, like they freak out or change companies or try to go independent. It
never works well for them, no.
Yeah.
Anyway, yeah, so that, I think that'll probably do it. Unless do you have any like closing thoughts on Robert Zimmerman? Robert Allen Zimmerman.
I think we want to come back to our opening point that like he's a better class of subversive. We're not going to get one like him. And I think also part of that, the reason that he's not doing it, he's just exhausted. Like, I think he kind of just quit after the 90s and kind of just floats around on his money and performs terrible shows.
Yeah.
One of the Wikipedia, or if you go on like the tour or the Wikipedia or somebody, it was like he performs much more than like the average like 60s star will come back like once every few years, do a couple shows and leave. They call it the never ending tour, where he's always touring, but it's just the lowest effort thing that I fail to be impressed.
Well, it's not even just that. It's like, I have to imagine, I mean, again, put yourself in his shoes. Like, he's this kind of miserable Jew who made all this money but could never really find any kind of lasting happiness. Like, God only imagines, you know, what can you imagine, like, what his relationship with his children is like? Like, okay, again, he gave them all this money. I'm sure they're grateful, but like,
they're all bar mitzvahed.
Right. So, like, you know, it's just, I mean, you have this like absentee dad. Like, I'm sure he doesn't have a home to be at. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
you can't go back to Duluth for sure.
Right, exactly. You don't want him there, you know? And so it's like kind of like, well, what is he going to do? Oh, whatever. He'll just tour, and he has.
And it's funny because,
you know,
he's ugly enough to be recognizable. Like, he's so decrepit, you
wouldn't
know.
You know that it was Bob Dylan.
You just buy a house. You think, oh, that's just Slow Me. It's like, oh, whatever. Right. Yeah, it's fine.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure, not even just, I mean, he could have one of these giant, I'm sure he does, like, on paper, own some sprawling mansion in Beverly Hills or whatever. But, like, you know, what's that going to do? Okay, I'm going to be in this giant empty house by myself.
Yeah.
And me and all my money and all my platinum records. Like, it just sounds miserable.
Like, it's funny. Like, Bob Dylan is alive, and it's funny because of what he's doing right now, just being the worst musician alive. But like, if you told me he died 15 years ago, I'd believe you. It's like,
yeah.
Oh yeah, we did had a
yeah,
yeah, you know.
Absolutely. So don't be like Bob Dylan. Don't be like Robert Zimmerman. You know, and if you have a conversion experience,
also, I've realized our culture terror like move is, we like a thing, you get red pilled. But then you want to re-listen to it.
Right.
So we'll do an episode. We'll rewatch the album or rewatch the show. And then we'll do an episode. So that's our process. I like it.
Pretty much. I mean, which is cool to me too. Yeah. You know, revisiting stuff that you... I remember liking, what was it? I think Desolation Row as a kid. And now I'm like, oh my God, this just is garbage. It just doesn't make any sense. It's like T.S. Eliot and Ezra Pound. And I'm like... Ezra Pound would have some words for you, boy. Anyway, take care, everybody.
are dumb. Girls are dumb.